Brian Hoffman, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Molly, and thank you for inviting me.
Brian Hoffman is a professor of medicine at the Harvard Medical School and author of Adrenaline. Well, clearly, in times of stress, adrenaline floods our blood, giving us the enhanced abilities that might save our lives, keeping ourselves in the gene pool. Adrenaline's a result of evolution for 4 billion years. You know, our defenses have been limited to what Darwinian selection provided, even if that was pretty nifty stuff, like insects that make their own camouflage. But we've gone beyond our innate defenses with technology. Mary Roach, she tells us about schemes to deal with fatigue and even noise on the battlefield, noise that could mess up vital communications. However, Annie Jacobson points out that there's no obvious endpoint to how far we can go to augment human abilities. And that makes me wonder if fight or flight will inevitably skew to fight.
We want to thank the members of the team who remain cool under the pressure of show production, Gary Niederhoff and Barbara Vance.
Thanks to financial support from Rena Scholsky David and Sammy David and to the William K. Bose Jr. Foundation. Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute, a nonprofit scientific and education organization whose scientists study the origin and nature of life. And a big thanks to our listeners.
Your ears have been attuned to the episode on defense. I'm Molly Bentley.
I'm Seth Shostak.
If you'd like to hear more Big Picture Science, well, you'll find lots of episodes in our archive at bigpicturescience.org.
And if you're a podcast listener but prefer listening to over-the-air radio because it's less stressful, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, consider letting them know you like the show.
Oh, and if you listen to the show via iTunes, we invite you to leave a review on our iTunes page.
And to reach us directly with your comments, well, email them all to bigpicturescience@seti.org.
Today I'll need something more crafty to evade detection by my human predators. Plenty of material in this trash bin. Ah, inspiration. Dark carpet fuzz to create eyebrows and a mustache. And ah, this garbage bag twist tie. A quick turn here and there, and it becomes a pair of glasses. Now I blend.
Yeah, and you too can be dancing with Daddy G every Tuesday afternoon from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Malt Shop, right here on WHFR.FM. The jukebox will be spinning the platters from the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and join me, Daddy G, at the Malt Shop on Tuesdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Be there. Or be square.
WHFR, Dearborn.
Good afternoon. This is WHFR Dearborn. You're listening to the show called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. Today, my special guest is Lynn Klassen. She is a professional face reader. And I just want to say welcome to the show, Lynn. How are you?
I'm fantastic, and I'm happy to be here, Mike.
Well, thank you. I'm glad somebody's fantastic. Are you often fantastic? Or
more than not.
Really? Well, that's good. Professional face reading, what exactly is that?
Most people, when they hear face reading, they think it's body language, reading the expressions on the face. But actually what I'm talking about is Western face reading, and that is reading the physical structures of the face. The face is made up of 144 muscles and 14 bones. They also outpicture the cellular level of your brain. So the more you use a particular area of the brain, the facial feature associated with it gets larger. When you stop using that area of the brain or do not repeat the pattern, that facial feature begins to atrophy. So your face is continually changing your whole life, and it's always a current representation of your personality and your innate nature.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell what a person is going through at different stages of their life based on what you see in their face?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is that health concerns or just maybe perhaps stress they're going through? What is that?
Well, there's two separate things with that. Chinese face reading is based on the medical aspects of the face, and it is visible on the face before it actually manifests in the organs of the body. So Chinese people use that as a very prominent part of their health culture. Here in the United States, we don't, because of the whole liability of diagnosing without a license and that sort of thing. So my focus is mainly on the personality and the nature of the person. People read faces for a multitude of different reasons. Either they're looking for a possible mate, they're looking to hire somebody. I do jury consulting, so sometimes it's the witness on the stand, or reading the jury during jury selection. So every single aspect of face reading can be applied to all areas of the life, but we're really reading the physical structure, not the momentary expression. The momentary micro expression would be body language, which of course can be faked. You can't change the slope of your forehead, the size of your nostrils, your jawline, because you've been called to jury duty or sat down at a poker table or you're doing a job interview. What you see is the truth of the person, and the beauty is you don't have to ask a single question, so there's no way they can lie.
Mm-hmm. So when you assist on picking out juries or whatever, you can just take a look at a person and, again, what you said, regardless of their body language or what they're saying, you can say that or see that that person is not the one that you want on that jury based on what the lawyer you're working for wants?
Absolutely. The attorney gives me a profile of his case and lets me know the type of juror he's looking for. You know, does he have a technical case that's going to take a lot of paying attention to details, or is he looking for an emotional juror that's going to look at things more on an emotional basis? So he tells me what type of case he's presenting, and then I help him get rid of the people that will have the most difficulty understanding the type of case that he's presenting. And the beauty with this is that because he doesn't have to ask any questions, the opposing counsel has no knowledge as to why he's, you know, excusing people from the jury.
Mm-hmm. But it all works out in the end where they're both satisfied, you and the lawyer, on the people you pick for a jury?
Well, often neither attorneys are happy.
Oh, really? Yeah, all right. What?
You only get so many peremptory challenges depending on the type of case. So It really depends on you're getting rid of the worst.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking for the people that will not be able to comprehend or follow the type of case that you're representing or
right.
going to present. And then once the jury's seated, so during voir dire or setting the jury, we don't include body language because everyone's giving their best performance to get excused.
Mm-hmm.
So I only do face reading during voir dire. Once the jury is seated, then body language comes in because now that's an indicator to the attorney as to how the person is taking in the evidence or the witness that he just presented. It's almost like a thermometer for them to know, okay, they're not getting it, they are getting it. I also, there was one case that I did, and this woman wasn't showing any expression at all. So during a break, I told the attorney, we call it walk the jury box. They walk back and forth and make eye contact with the different jurors. And I told him, at some point when you would use an exclamation point, I want you to slam your hand down on the rail. I said, I believe she's had so much Botox that you won't see an expression. And it's just like if a person's startled, you should see some expression. Sure enough, he did that, and there was like no expression at all. So once you realize that, then you don't pay attention to that juror because you can't read their body language.
Mm-hmm.
You can read not the expressions on their face, but you would look for a hand, arm, feet, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, how often does that happen where a person has so much, plastic surgery done that you can't really read a face?
Often.
Really? Well, I guess vanity is important, but anyway, that plays a part. Now, what if a person has a beard or something like that, a gentleman?
Oftentimes, we feel that a person that chooses to wear a full beard is often hiding their softer side. In fact, we call the full round beard a Santa Claus beard. Mm-hmm. So most of the time, you can read still the structure of the face, the jawline, and that sort of thing. Except today, they're wearing the very long, full, bushy beards. And then it's really, you can't read it at all. It's almost like a mask.
Right. Well, don't most lawyers advise their clients to shave beards if they have them going into court just to try to look presentable?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And that plays a part. That's important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The one trait, the main trait that I usually change on a person going into court is their eyebrows.
Okay.
Oftentimes, I don't want them to go into court with like Al Pacino or Robert De Niro eyebrows because they already look a little evil.
Mm-hmm.
So I will offer to tweeze the eyebrows, much to the defendant's dismay.
Right.
And I tell them, look, you know, I'm going home. I'm
yeah.
going home tonight no matter what. This is your life, not mine.
Right.
If you don't want it, you know, if you don't think those things affect us, why do you think when you're brought into court, they bring you into court and they take you out of the leg change before the jury comes in? They know it influences a person. And I said, so, you know, I can do this or not. So what we do is we take it. I want them to go in with Richie Cunningham eyebrows.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to be judged by the evidence, not by their physical appearance. If they've been incarcerated a long period of time and they're looking a little yellow, I often will put blush on their cheeks, again, to their dismay. But I want them, you know, a healthy person
right.
looks robust and there's some color in your cheeks.
Right, healthy, clean cut.
Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
They cut their hair, they do the beard, yeah, all clean shaven, absolutely.
Right. Why are the eyebrows so important?
Because you want them to look as if they are neutral. The eyebrows are almost like the emoticon of the face, you know. So the angle, the height, the pitch, the color. But it's mainly the what we call those very extreme wild eyebrows. Oftentimes, it does look like the person's frowning. And so we don't want them to go in and look like they're frowning. Part of what we want the defendant to do is keep a very neutral face.
Mm-hmm. Right, or you could, like you mentioned earlier, they could look kind of creepy with, you know, bushy eyebrows or whatever, and that would affect, I guess, the perception of the jury, correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. How did you get involved in face reading? Did you just wake up one day and said, hey, I'm going to start reading faces, or was it something that was progressive? How did that work out?
Actually, I was working for a large retail chain. I was managing 15 stores. I opened the state of Michigan for them. My stores were as far north as Midland and as far west as Holland, Michigan. And I'm in Metro Detroit. So if my store didn't open, I cannot be there in 15 minutes to get it open. I was hiring mostly entry-level management people. And of course, when I was in their store, they ran it perfectly and they were wonderful with their customers. I wasn't sure that's the way they were treated when I wasn't there. And of course, my bonus was based on some of this. So in the beginning, I used to wear disguises.
Oh, really?
And go from store to store to see, okay, how are they really running this store?
Mm-hmm.
Then Robert Whiteside came into town, and he was one of the four founders of face reading. I took a class with him, and I thought, oh, wow, this could make my job a whole lot easier. You know, because, of course, in a job interview, people are telling you what they think you want to hear.
Right, right.
So I started studying face reading. Became fascinated with it, started using it in the corporate world. As my studies continued, I realized that if I had had this information earlier in my life would have been entirely different. Probably would not have divorced my ex-husband, and I definitely would have raised my boys very differently. You know, they were almost raised like twins because they were 18 months apart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would do that very, very differently. And I thought, you know, if everyone in the world knew this, their life could be better.
Mm-hmm.
And after studying it for 3 years, I quit the corporate world, and I've been doing it full-time ever since, 23 years now.
Mm-hmm. Haven't looked back, right?
Never.
It must be fascinating every day, just learning new things and seeing new faces.
Yes. I've never gotten bored with it because there's always another area to take it into. There's always a new application that I haven't thought about before. You know, one of a client brought up the other day, what about adoption?
Mm-hmm.
And that would be wonderful. You
right.
know? So every time you look at a person, you can have a almost like a key into how best to interact with them. Normally, face reading is looking to create harmony and understanding between two people. You know, I did a conference for UAW and General Motors. You know, they currently have five generations working in their plants side by side.
Mm-hmm.
So doing the diversity training with them helps them understand across races, cultures, ages, and everything else across the line.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned that you would raise your children differently if you knew things. Do you suggest that could help parents just by looking at the face of their child, perhaps how they could treat them and how to raise them?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Most face readers don't read a child's face until they're an adult, like 18 or in high school. As a mother and grandmother, I think that's a travesty, because you can see the traits that they have, and you can, when they're still very young, kind of guide them towards other behaviors that maybe are more productive than the current ones. I like a baby to be 10 days old. That way, you know, the trauma from birth is usually passed, and what you see is what you get. At that point in time, they're basically a genetic blueprint of their parents.
Mm-hmm.
Because they haven't lived enough life to start choosing for themselves. So we start out a combination of our parents. And then as time passes and we get more outside of the house and we start school and we have friends and neighbors and that sort of thing, they come into our life and influence our life. People say, oh, my nose is, I got my Uncle George's nose. Well, if you have Uncle George's nose, that means you make decisions the same way Uncle George does.
Mm-hmm.
So they either embrace the behavior or not. If they embrace the behavior, they'll maintain that facial feature and it may even grow and get more developed. If they do not embrace the behavior, then you see pretty soon that facial feature disappears off their face. My youngest son tends to be a little methodical about the way he does things. And when my grandson, the 8-year-old, was born, he had methodical pads. But by the time he was 2 or 3, they had disappeared. So that's not a choice that he made in his life.
Mm-hmm. So what usually comes first? I mean, does the person's face change, or do their, you know, attributes, their behavior change, and then the face changes?
Correct. The attributes change and the behaviors change and then the face. It's like, think about going to a gym. You go to the gym and you work out a certain muscle. Well, it doesn't matter how old you are or what color your skin is, that muscle will develop based on the exercise and use of it.
Right.
If you give up your membership and stop going to the gym, it starts atrophying. But it'll take time before it actually shows to a point where somebody can recognize it.
Mm-hmm. So when you work with Do you work a lot with children or not necessarily? I mean, helping parents, or I know you mentioned adoption, that could all help, and I guess partnering the right child with the right adult?
Yes. Oftentimes parents will come to me because they don't understand why a child is doing a specific behavior. And they don't know how to redirect it either. So mainly, it might be about children, but I'm usually dealing with the parents or the educator or the adult that's involved. And they're the ones that are going to help kind of guide and direct them and teach them a new behavior that might be a little bit more beneficial as they go through life.
Mm-hmm. If a parent tried to mold their child into a certain type of behavior, again, the face would follow suit? Is
yes.
that how it works?
Yes.
So you would just see that it might be more pronounced in them than perhaps their father or their mother?
Yes, because when they're conceived, they are starting out where their parents are at conception.
Mm-hmm.
So they will start out with the trait stronger than their parents did, and it will develop as they go through life. I mean, if you think about it, it's just like anything else. We say use it or lose it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if they use a particular area of their brain in a certain way, this, you know, whichever it is that we're looking at on the parent, it will develop and it will get larger as they grow into an adult. If they do not repeat that behavior, you know how oftentimes people say, well, not anymore, but used to be, oh, you know, the milkman or the post office worker or something. But the thing is, they either embrace the behavior or not. So sometimes you look at them and it's hard to know that they're from the same family.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I've done presentations for the mothers of multiples. And all these women have, you know, a couple sets of twins or triplets or quadruplets or, you know, whatever. And they were shocked because they brought pictures of their children. And where most people in the family say, well, they all look alike. They can't tell them apart. But with the training that I've had, I could point out each individual trait and tell them, well, this child is this way, this one's this way, this one. And they go, oh my God, you're right. How can you read that? Well, then it's, you know, it's not that we're remolding them per se, but it's like, you know, if you see a behavior and you know it's going to give them difficulty as they go through life, if you help build new skills to help them do that more easily, that reflects on the face. Your face is a current picture of who you are on any given day.
Mm-hmm. So it would always be easy for you to tell who was who as far as twins or triplets or whatever is concerned?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I might not know this one's Sue and that's Pat, but I know this is the one that does it this way and this is the one that does it this way.
Mm-hmm. Real briefly, I just wanted to remind everybody that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. My name is Mike Holloway, and this show is called Metaphysically Speaking. My special guest this month is Lynn Klassen. She's a professional face reader. Now, as you progressed in learning face reading, what did you decide to do to branch out? I mean, did you think that, well, I could work with lawyers, or how did that branch out into a profession for you?
Well, I started out with business because that's where I had invested my energy into it. Mm-hmm. And then pretty soon, so business and then, you know, salespeople were asking me for presentations. Then, of course, single groups started asking me for information and for compatibility readings. Companies started contacting me about HR, their people learning it. You know, I just did a group presentation or training, three-day training, for a company who was looking to train their people in HR that were dealing with employee conflicts. How to sit there and take two people with opposing points of view or opinions and find a place of compatibility for them working together. But and then I had one workshop and a woman came in and she says, my husband wants to know when you're going to apply this to poker.
Mm-hmm.
Light bulb moment.
Yeah.
It was like, oh my God, there's nobody in the world that has applied this to poker. Ching.
Right.
Got very interested, got busy learning about poker and started visiting tournaments and watching and applying it. And now I'm the only person on the planet that has training materials for poker players.
Mm-hmm. Did you actually play the games themselves or did you just watch?
Just watch.
Really? Okay.
I'm very good at reading people. I am not good at hiding myself.
Yeah. You know yourself very well. I mean, do you look in the mirror and I'm sure you can see the changes that have gone on in your face over the years. Can you mold your behavior to change your face? I mean,
absolutely.
Does that happen?
Yeah. Absolutely. Most Caucasian men lose their upper lip by the time they're 50 because upper lip represents verbal communications of emotions. When I was in the corporate world, my eyebrows were much, much higher than what they are now, which meant I came across as very unapproachable, aloof, haughty, stuck up, and I didn't like that. So one of the things I did is I forced myself into situations where I was unfamiliar, I was uncomfortable, and made myself do that. And my eyebrows, even during my first 3 years of training, every time I would go to my next class, my eyebrows would be the topic of conversation because they were coming down, but not at the same rate. The right side of your body is run by left brain, the left side's run by right brain. So my right eyebrow would come down because I was more comfortable with left brain things, but the emotional side of me was not. So the eyebrows did not come down at the same rate. So when I would walk in the door, the first thing people would say, because, you know, we had to travel to Burbank, California for our classes at that point in time. There was nobody in the Midwest teaching it. And so there'd be 2 or 3 months in between our classes, and then we'd go stay for a week or two. And my eyebrows were always the topic of conversation. So they probably have changed more than anything else on my face.
Mm-hmm. What's the first thing you look for in a face?
You know, it depends on the situation. If you're meeting somebody for the first time, the height of the eyebrows are the most important because the height of the eyebrows tell you how much personal space that person needs in order to feel comfortable. Men will have either low or moderate eyebrows. There is not a man with high eyebrows on the planet. So men are more comfortable with approachability. They're more casual, more flexible. They don't put on a lot of airs. It's like, hey, this is who I am. Take me or leave me. Women can have low, moderate, or high eyebrows. Michelle Obama is a representation of high eyebrows. So when you meet them for the first time, they come across as a little aloof, distant. You feel uncomfortable approaching them. Once you know them, though, the eyebrows no longer come into play. So oftentimes in sales or singles dating, eyebrows are very important because if you invade the space, it's like a circuit breaker. The lights are on and nobody's home. You could be selling the very product they've wanted and now they can't process it. They can't think about it. In poker, nostrils are the most important trait. The size of the nostril tells you how well that person trusts their instincts. Are they cautious? overly cautious, or are they bold? Are they that, you know, go big or go home sort of person? With dating, eyelids are the most important. Intimate relationships, eyelids are the most important. Hmm. The eyelids show you how much intimacy a person needs or how much personal space they need. So if a person has what we call epicathic fold, which is that skin that hangs over the eyelid, that tells you they'd like a very close huggy, kissy, touchy, feely, let's do everything together. And when they're upset, they want to be close. They want to talk. They want to touch. If you look at a person and you can see their whole eyelid exposed, that tells you that they like some personal space. They like time to themselves. They like to be a little bit less connected. And when they're upset, they like to go away. They like to pull away and process what's happened. So it's hardwired in the brain. It's something that does not change, even when either party think that they've made this colossal compromise, very little. Mm-hmm. It's so ingrained. It's very, very hard. People can do it, but it takes a lot of work to do it. Mm-hmm. And in business, when you look at the eyelids, if you can see their whole eyelid, they're going to be direct into the point. Tell it like it is. So oftentimes salespeople go, oh, that's the worst, you know, customer that I have. Well, really, they're the easiest because you actually know exactly where you stand with them all the time.
Right.
If you notice, almost all people in politics have that skin over their eyes. They can be very discreet, very diplomatic. You know, they're in this town, this UAW, they're talking this way. And, you know, the veterans, they're going to talk this way. It's very easy for them to switch from one position and one type of person to the other. The more eyelid that's visible, the more direct and straight to the point the person is. So it isn't that one is more honest than the other. Their delivery of the information is either very direct, almost blunt and straight to the point, or are they discreet and diplomatic?
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned that in addition to all the other things that you have done with faces, that when people are interested in a mate, do they just bring a picture of their mate to you, or do they come in person and you read them live, so to speak, or how does that work?
Well, it depends. Men will often bring a picture of somebody that they're interested in. Women oftentimes are just looking in general. Okay, what do I need to look for? What would this person have in order to be compatible? Because the traits that you would want in an attorney or an accountant would be very different than perhaps what you would want in a lover or a mate. And the same thing, you know, there's no right or wrong, good or bad. It's how does this person work with me, mm-hmm. with my style, with my, you know, perceptions and the way I choose to live. They could be the perfect partner for your girlfriend, and absolutely wrong for you.
Mm-hmm. And again, any business dealings too, you look to see how you're going to work with a person. If you are thinking about hiring that person as an attorney or even a mechanic, anything, right?
When you're hiring an employee, you're looking at, okay, how does this person fit the position that we're hiring for? Especially now, everyone's looking for work, and oftentimes they're applying for jobs they really don't want. And the companies don't want to invest all that money in training them only to have them get another offer and leave 3 months down the road. Mm-hmm. So one, how do they fit this position that we have available? Two, how are they going to interact with the person that's going to be their superior? With dating, it's a little bit different because you're looking for compatibility with you. The boss that I would want to have would be very different than the person I want to be romantic and live with. You know, it's like if I'm going to my tax guy, you know, I looked for somebody that had very close set eyes. I looked for somebody who had very low ears. We call it mental development lines, because I want every penny that's mine and not Uncle Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Would I want to live with this man? Absolutely not. You know, I look online so much business is done over the internet. When somebody contacts me, the first thing I do is Google them or look at their LinkedIn so I know who I'm talking to before I reply to them. And because most of the time we're looking for harmony, we're looking to create a place of balance. You know, in business, you want to meet them where they are and take them where you want them to be. So you're looking to, how do I create harmony with this person? The only time you're not using it in their favor is law enforcement and poker. Then you're using your knowledge of what their face tells you against them.
Mm-hmm. Right, so you can act appropriately. Now, with poker, I guess, how do you really guys wear those big sunglasses and the hats when they're at the tables, and it's hard to even see half their face. How do you read a face then?
Well, first of all, you know, with body language, you have to wait for them to sit down at the table and the game to start, and then you create a baseline, and then you look for variances. With Western face reading, the minute you see them in the casino, the tournament, wherever you are, you can start reading their face before they put on their hoodie and put on their glasses. And also, there are a lot of traits, like nostrils are the most important in poker. People aren't covering their noses.
Not generally, no.
They're looking to cover the emotional response that they have to their hand or to the flop or the river or whatever the case may be. They don't know that their face, the structure of their face, gives a more definite profile of who they are, how they're likely to play. You know, is this person an emotional player? Are they a very technical player? Are they going to play loose? Are they going to play tight? You know, all of that stuff is written on their face because that's how they approach life in general. That's not going to change at the poker table.
Mm-hmm.
But micro expressions or tells are the reaction to what just took place. So that is something that only lasts a few seconds, and that's what they're trying to hide with their glasses and the other things. Now, if you look, so many of the people, you know, Russians and the Chinese and a lot of other cultures are coming in where, you know, their culture is more stoic to begin with. They're not wearing all the paraphernalia trying to hide because they, you know, on a daily basis, they keep that stoic poker face as part of their culture. And I think it'll be harder for the Americans to overcome some of this because we're more open books.
Mm-hmm. Now, do a lot of salespeople and business people use this service as well? I mean, learning to read faces?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of entrepreneurs do because, you know, they may only have two or three employees. And it's very important to them that the company run the way they want it to be, even when they're not around. Salespeople usually invest in it quite confidently because they can go into a room, take a few seconds to look at the person, and they know exactly how that person wants to do business. It gives you such a huge advantage over just kind of guessing. Most of us tend to treat people the way we want to be treated. Well, you only have about a 50% chance of getting it right then. Mm-hmm. If you can walk in, I tell single people all the time, in less time that it takes you to drink a cup of coffee, you can know your compatibility level with another person. It will not tell you their morals or their values, but it will tell you what will it be like to cohabitate with this person. What are some of the challenges? Most of the time, the majority, we say you want 70% similar, 30% different. If it's too similar, it's almost like living with your brother or sister. You know, there's not that spark that you need to keep the romance alive. On the other hand, there are certain traits like the eyelids, and there's a philtrum underneath from your nose to your upper lip, which represents libido. Some of those things aren't going to change. So you see it for what it is, and then you ask yourself, can I live with this? It's not going to change. No matter how much they love you or care about you, it is hardwired in their brain. It's not going to change.
Mm-hmm. It's not something that you can change over time. It's just there, and it's always going to be there.
Certain traits, you know, like four or five are so hardwired, no, they're not going to change. The vast majority, though, it does.
Mm-hmm.
People say, you know, don't you notice as people live together, you know, on their 50th anniversary, they start looking alike and whatever? Yes. Because each one has kind of compromised and met the other person halfway. Do they look like identical twins? Of course not. But do some of their facial features soften and look more like the other person? Absolutely. Because you don't stay married 50 or 60 years and not have learned to compromise halfway or meet your partner halfway.
Right. Now, when you look at a person or a person looks at a potential mate, how long does it take a person to really get it down well enough that they can tell in a brief instant who that person is or if they should be together?
It'll take some study.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, you know, one, they take a workshop. Two, they have a book. Three, I do compatibility readings for them. And that way they get a printout of photos of their face. They get certain traits that basically, this will be easy. This will take some compromise. This will never work. So they know certain traits. You know, it's like a scoop nose. That person really is very emotional in nature, and they put people in relationships first.
What do you mean by a scoop nose? Just
where the nose kind of turns up, the bridge of the nose scoops
okay.
up,
like
a concave
Bob Hope type nose. kind of?
I think so, if I remember his nose.
Yeah. Okay.
But it'll be kind of concave. Mm-hmm. Then there might be the person who has that kind of hawk or beaky looking nose where the bridge of the nose turns downward. Mm-hmm. They're the exact opposite. They're looking at what's in it for them. They're very, you know, very logical, a little cynical, a little skeptical. So they really don't fit with that concave nose person, you know, and that isn't going to change. You accept them as they are. If the person has a straight nose, that means they're very objective, practical, realistic. And so they're, think of them as like the middle of the pendulum. It's not such a stretch for them to be with the hawk nose or the concave nose because it's not such an extreme.
Mm-hmm. So they can kind of compromise more or less.
Right, because they're in the middle.
Right. Briefly, again, I just want to remind everybody that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This show is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest this month is Lynn Klassen, and she is a professional face reader. What I would like to know is, can you ever really turn it off? I mean, do you just maybe go to the store or whatever, and you're always looking at people's faces to see what they're like? Does that happen a lot?
In the beginning, it did. Mm-hmm. You know, especially the first 3 years that I studied it. And that's what I tell students to do. You're waiting for your dinner to come, look at the people in the booth next to you, watch the waitress, look at the faces and read them. At this point, I've been doing it 23 years. I don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. It's just not, you know, just not something I do. However, if I'm someplace and somebody has some extreme facial feature, then it's like, wow, you know. They flew me to Toronto to do a talk show. And there was a man on the plane with me, and it was a very small plane. And he had, it looked like almost two thumbs above his eyebrows, two big bulges, almost like two thumbs. And that's called methodical pads. Most people, only one out of 500 people have any methodical pads. And we put them on a scale of 1 to 10. But zero is average, and this man's looked like a 14.
Oh, really?
That and big, I thought, huh? Oh, my God, you know, I wonder what he does for a living, you know. And I'm on the shy side, so I promised we had to, you know, get off the plane on the tarmac, pick up our bag, and take it into the small airport. And I promised myself if he was still down on the tarmac when I got down, I would ask him, and I would ask him for a picture. So I got down there, and he was there, and I said, I know this sounds really strange, but I was old enough to be his mother, so he knew I wasn't coming on to him. And I said, but I'm a professional face reader, and you have, and then I explained about the methodical pads, and I asked him if I could have a picture, and he said yes. And then he told me that he was one of the top executives with, is it Sirius or Cyrus Radio?
Yeah, well, serious.
That, yeah, so that made sense then that he had the methodical pads. You know, one of my students, the one that they play poker, you know, he has the very strong methodical pads. But he was a chemical engineer. Makes perfect sense.
So what did the pads show again?
The methodicalness, the need to repeat certain patterns and certain things over and over and over once they found a way.
Uh-huh.
But it can be very difficult in a personal relationship.
Right.
You know, because the other person has never felt that way. So we think that they're just choosing to be difficult, where in their mind, if it's not done that way, they kind of feel discombobulated. It's hard for them to concentrate.
Right. Have you ever advised someone, they say that based on what you say, this person is not a good match for you, and do they get upset with you because maybe they really want everything to work?
Yes.
Yes.
I had one client, she showed me a picture. And she's, oh, it's so wonderful. We're talking on, they were on online dating. And, oh, he's so wonderful. We're talking hours at a time and blah, blah, blah. And I said, it's one of the agents I worked for. I says, well, he's sitting down in the photo, which tells me he's probably shorter than what he's told you. He's at least 10 feet from the camera, so he's older than what he wants you to know. And he's wearing sunglasses and a baseball hat. I said, when you think about putting a picture on a dating site, normally it's like that's your advertisement. You're wanting to look the best you can. And so you would have to realize that probably what he's projecting to you may not exactly be accurate. Well, they met for a date. He was so short that when he sat down in the booth, his feet did not touch the floor in the restaurant. He was 15 years older than what he told her he was. and that sort of thing, you know. So she, of course, she was disappointed. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, you know, we do tend to be attracted to either the exact opposite, because there's something about that that we right. like. We know we don't have that. So in the beginning, it's kind of new and exciting, but the longer, you know, you go into the relationship, it gets old. Mm-hmm. And then especially women think that, well, if he loves me, he'll change. Well, he is who he is. Right. You love and accept him as he is, or move on.
Right.
You know, again, there's some traits that can be slightly negotiated, and you have to announce your style and work on it. But again, there's certain traits that just are not compatible.
Right. Well, I know either a man or a woman feels they can change their partner, but that's always not the case. So in that case, you advise them just move on and find somebody else that's more compatible? Because also something you touched on, you always hear that saying, opposites attract. But that's not necessarily a good thing then, right?
Well, it doesn't make for the easiest compatibility. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like with most of the time, most of the people, there'll be, you know, most of the traits are, like I said, negotiable. If the other person's working and willing to work on some of that to meet you halfway, that's fine. If they're not, it's going to make it very challenging. And again, there's those certain traits like the eyelids and intimacy that it isn't going to change. You know, it doesn't matter even if the person thinks they're trying to change. So you either accept it as is or, yeah, you move on.
Mm-hmm. And now you said earlier that you probably wouldn't have divorced your husband. I don't want to get personal, but there are things that you, in retrospect, realize about him that was special.
My ex-husband was a very handsome man. He had very low eyebrows. He was comfortable with informality, comfortable approaching people. And everywhere we went, I thought he was flirting with other women to get me upset.
Mm-hmm.
I had very high eyebrows. So when I walked into the same party, you know, I was not gregarious and outgoing. I would turn into like the wallflower. And the one teacher in the one class, he said, you know, he got up and stood on the chair and looked down at me. And he said, Lynn, this is how you appear to the rest of us in the world. Wow. Then he said, you know, he put two folding chairs in the front of the class. He says, come on, Lynn, we're going to go on a date. Okay. So he gets out. He's okay, we're there. And he walks to the front of the classroom, the line of chairs. He walks up to the first person. He goes, hi, I'm Ross Riddell, and you are? And he followed down the line of chairs, introducing himself to every person. And I followed along behind him and said nothing. So he goes, oh, party's over, Lynn. Let's get back in the car. And he says, you know, we sit in the chairs. And he goes, now, wasn't that a great party? I go, no. So then he pretended the same scenario, but he went to the first person. He goes, hi, I'm Ross Riddell, and you are? And they said, I'm Joe Smith. He goes, I'd like you to meet my friend, Lynn Klassen.
Mm-hmm.
Felt entirely different. So all the time, the conflict that I felt of where he was doing things to kind of torment me, you know, to make me insecure and all the other stuff, was just, he was just being himself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I was the extreme opposite. Once I knew somebody, then I can be very outgoing and very friendly. But I have a tendency to come across the other way. And so that one insight alone, I thought, oh, my gosh, this would have changed so much. Mm-hmm. When I realized our communication style was very different. And I thought if he wasn't talking, he had nothing to say. No. He just wasn't as verbal as I was, and I talked so much, I didn't give him half a chance to talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a lot of times I tell women, you know, if your lips and mouth are twice the size of the gentleman you're dating, then you talk twice as much as he wants to listen. You need to gear it back. You know, take what you have to say to your mother, your girlfriend, your neighbor, your coworker, and only the things that apply to him, because it's like circuitry overload. They want like soup and salad, and you bring out a 7-course meal.
Yeah, a little too much. Huh?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, does this work across all races, religions, everything? I mean, you can always see the same thing regardless in a person's face.
Well, religion is not something you can read in the personality.
Okay.
But all cultures and all races. The only thing the color of your skin tells a person is how close to the equator your bloodline originated. That's it. Excuse me. They also, when you go, this doesn't matter what color skin you have when you go to the gym. If you do the same exercise, no matter what color you are, the muscle will grow in the exact same way. The same thing is true with the brain. So there are certain cultures that have more prominent certain traits, but it will have the same meaning anywhere in the world. You know, in America, we're such a melting pot, you know, that there's a little bit of Heinz variety, they say. You know, there's so much of us. But when you go into any place in the world, like that, we have the epicathic fold, the skin over the eyes. Well, when you go to Asia, everyone will have that, you know. So it has the same meaning, no matter where you are. Now, with body language, the body language we have in the United States does not apply in the rest of the world. But face reading does. What you see is what you get. The nostril, the shape, you know, everything will have the exact same meaning. You know, there are certain traits that people in certain parts of the world will choose to have plastic surgery. So if you know historically that culture has a certain trait, you know, if you're reading their face, I might say, you know, have you had surgery on whatever? And usually they'll say yes or no. But otherwise, it's like, you know, sometimes I saw this one woman and basically her face looked like Hillary Clinton. And then all of a sudden she had high cheekbones like Abe Lincoln. That doesn't fit. Mm-hmm. That's like seeing a cactus in the backyard in Michigan. It just doesn't fit. And I was speaking on the Royal Caribbean Cruise Line on face reading, and she was passing me in the hall, and I did stop her, and I go, excuse me, but I'm a professional face reader. Have you had cheek implants? She's, oh, my God, I have. How did you know? First of all, her surgeon should be shot because they were way too large for the scale of her face. Two, they weren't even remotely similar. The two sides look so different. But it's like it just didn't fit. You know what I'm saying? It's like if I saw a Middle Eastern person and they have that scoop kind of concave, turned up nose, that doesn't fit. That tells me more than likely they've had plastic surgery.
Mm-hmm. So there again, I mean, that would alter your ability to read their face?
Yes. Once they've had a particular trait altered, then you're not seeing the truth of what it is. But most of the time, you know, as long as I've been doing this, you kind of know because it just, again, it doesn't fit the scope of what is normal.
Mm-hmm. Have you worked with certain clients over a period of time and you can see the changes in their face? When they change, perhaps you tell them what career they might be best suited for, anything like that. Have you noticed changes in their face if you see them again?
Yes. Oftentimes, you know, you'll see a trait change because they've made a change in their life. There's one man that I've used in several of my books because the two sides of his face are very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
He left the business world and he's self-employed and his face is coming back into alignment, is coming back into balance. So yes, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, take pictures of your children, like, you know, when the school year starts or on their birthday or, you know, when football season, basketball, when the seasons change, because we look in the mirror at ourselves and we look at the people around us on a daily basis and the change is so slow, we don't notice it. But when you look at it from one card marking to the next, you can see the changes. And oftentimes, like all these people whose children are being bullied, you'll see that on their face if you're paying attention. But it happens so gradually, most of the time they're not putting together that there's actually been such a radical change.
Mm-hmm. Could a parent help a child that's being bullied change their face to perhaps, I guess, have a different perception from other people that they wouldn't get picked on?
Well, actually what they would do is help them build their self-confidence and their courage and how to stand up for themselves. And as they do that, the face will change to reflect it.
Mm-hmm. So you can tell if a person's getting happier or perhaps sadder as they go along based on whatever life decisions they've made, and you can just tell it in the face?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And do you advise people on how to perhaps change something so that they have a more joyful life?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is that part of your job in working with clients?
It's really not part of my job, but it is part of what kind of evolves if they've had you know, an in-depth reading. Because a lot of times they know something's off and they're looking to change that. So basically, I'm not telling them what to do, but all I have to do is say, you know, this is your pattern, and this is what the majority of people have. So this is how you come across to them. You know, perhaps if you did this or, you know, whatever, then they can see again, because it's helping them spot that place of compatibility. You know, we tend to treat people the way we want to be treated. You know, this one girl took one of my classes, and I told her that she talked four times more than most people want to listen. She quickly engaged me and said I was completely incorrect. And she was going on, and this guy in class says, "Don't you get it? You're making her whole case for her." Well, the thing is, you see, she's been verbal her whole life. She was brought up in a very verbal family. So she saw who she was as normal and average.
Right.
Our perception of ourselves is not always accurate. So when I told her, I said, "You know, you don't believe me? Go home and ask your friends. Tell them you want the honest truth. They'll tell you." And I said, "But you have an instant reaction. All you have to do is, if your mouth is twice as large as the person you're talking to, you know you need to talk half as much as what you would like, and then spend time encouraging them and pulling them into the conversation."
Mm-hmm. Well, that can be hard for people to change like that, correct?
Correct. They have to practice it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like oftentimes I'm invited to do trade shows, not trade shows, but, you know, where they want me to do the face readings and that sort of stuff. And I'm there to sell my products and things. I suck at the selling. I love going and talking, and I don't mind selling the product, but the whole sales process, it's not my nature. That's not the way. So the girl that talks four times than most people like to listen, I invited her to work the show with me.
Uh-huh. And she was the one that talked.
Yeah. And I said, you know, so she would cover the booth while I'm off doing the presentations or whatever. And I said something or another. I said, "Well, you know, I'd really like to know whatever." I don't remember what she said. "Well, I'm not afraid to go and ask." I go, "I know, that's why I invited you."
Yeah, right. Well, there again, you can pick out business partners or whatever, I mean, along with mates, depending on what traits they have and how they work together.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Now, this particular profession has taken you many, many places. Where are some of the places you've gone in relation to doing your job? I know you've traveled a lot, and I'm just curious, where are some of the places you've gone and some of the things you've done? Some of the groups you've worked with.
One of the things I found very interesting was Al Kaline.
Oh, really?
It was his 75th birthday party, and I was invited to be more or less the sorbet in between courses. His friend was giving him a birthday party in the wine cellar of his home. Food was going to have to be brought down a spiral staircase. And so each one of the people at the tables had a mirror. So once they would clear one course, then I would come in, go walk around the table. They had mirrors. I would read faces. When the next course came down, I would sit down. They would enjoy that course, and then we'd go on to the next stage. So that was a lot of fun to watch, you know, this icon of our community and interact with his buddies on the Tigers and that sort of thing. I also worked at an event in Cincinnati at the museum there. And, you know, there were all kinds of wonderful exhibits. And one of the things next to me was a buffet of vegetables and fruits. And they had a man sitting inside the watermelon head. And he would wait for a conversation to start, and then he'd pop up the head and everything. So there was interesting to be a part of that and doing many face readings. Just a few weeks ago, I worked for Procter & Gamble. And it was their communication consortium. So there were people from all these different countries and getting the ability to read their faces in between. They were all peers. And so getting to read, you know, people from so many countries that, you know, I've been to 22 countries, but I haven't been to all of them. And seeing the different faces and how they still interact is just exciting. It never, ever bores me.
Mm-hmm. Never a dull moment.
No.
Well, I imagine that it's probably rewarding, too, when you can create a difference in a person's life in a positive direction, correct?
Correct. I did a New Year's Eve party, and there was a young girl that came in, and she had what we call hemispheric variation. The two sides of her face were very different. She was probably about 13, and she wanted to be a soccer star. And her face said, "Oh my gosh, she's just not, her brain's not wired for this." and there was a misalignment of her eyes. And so a man came in later to have a reading, and he made a comment about I had read his daughter. And so I asked him to get his wife in to come in, and I wanted to share something with them, which normally I wouldn't have done at a party. Mm-hmm. So they came in, and I explained to them what was going on with their daughter and how she really needed to have this alignment with some glasses that the vision experts work on. And I said, that will make everything easier for her. Well, she went out. It was her sister's party, so she got online, and she started Googling and looking for stuff. But she contacted me a few months later and said that they had looked into it and that they had seen this eye doctor and that the alignment had been brought into line and that they watched her blossom as she started middle school. And to look at the little girl, I mean, I knew that changed her life. Every aspect of her life would change from that, from being so hard and struggling to it being easy and for her to progress.
Mm-hmm. So that helped her with sports and everything
sports,
else?
Sports, school, friends, everything.
Mm-hmm. What did you find out about Al Kaline? I'm just kind of curious because he was kind of a boyhood hero of mine growing up. So
I don't remember the individual facial features or anything, but I can say it was really interesting as he shared that he had gone back to his high school class reunion. And that he told them they wanted him to say something. And he said, I want to tell all you girls out there that turned me down for a date, thank you. And he introduced his wife of X amount of years. And he said, you know, you turned me down then, but look who I am now.
Right.
But he's really very shy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he strikes me as kind of a shy guy. He's not really one to, you know, do a lot of commercials in the past and what have you, getting out there. Real quickly, how can people get a hold of you if they choose to?
My website is Face Reading by Lynn, FaceReadingByLynn.com. Mm-hmm. So it's LIN, not Lynn, LYNN. They can also find me on Facebook, Face Reading by Lynn. Twitter, Lynn is my Twitter is Lynn, LIN, Face Reader.
So you're on all the social media sites pretty much?
Yes. I mean, with the internet, thank God for the internet, because I have clients in 46 countries.
Mm-hmm.
Without the internet, that wouldn't be possible.
Right. Well, we were talking earlier, and you said you use Skype quite a bit, right, in contacting people?
Yes. So people can contact me. I do mini face readings, 15 minutes, $30, 30 minutes, $60, and they can be anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm. So that is obviously a convenience. You don't have to fly there.
That's right.
I would imagine, though, in the past, they could just send you a picture, though, and you could determine then.
They still send me a picture.
Mm-hmm.
They send me pictures, and I crop them and fit them, and that way I have them on my laptop when we do Skype so that they can follow my cursor and then know exactly which facial feature that they're looking at as I'm talking.
Mm-hmm. What's the progress with your poker information? Is that progressing? I mean, is that getting out there and people are actually accessing that?
And more every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got a book of about 90 pages. They also get a deck of cards that are color-coded, laminated, bound with an O-ring that they can carry with them as they go through their life. And also a coaching CD. You know, one of the guys helped me understand that, you know, he spends a lot of time in his car. And being able to listen to that during the commute helps them actually integrate it. So they get three items in the package. People that have studied it tell me that they've increased their winnings by 30%.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. That's fairly healthy, right?
Absolutely.
That's worth the cost of whatever they're paying to get that information.
One pot maybe would pay for it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Well, Lynn, thank you very much. You know, it's really fascinating, the human face and how it can change, and you just take it for granted that it's just there. But talking to you, it's just so fascinating that all the changes and all the things that can happen to a person just through their face and how the face changes, very interesting. Thank you for doing the show. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. I always like being on your show.
Well, thank you. Okay, I'm back, and I just want to thank my guest for this month, Lynn Klassen. She is a professional face reader. Very, very interesting. I could have kept going on. I had a few more questions that I could have asked her. But anyway, I hope you enjoyed the show and the interview. Again, very fascinating. So I thank Lynn for being on the show today. I also want to thank Mark Sheeler, my producer. He always helps me out. I really appreciate all his help as well. With all that being said, thank you for listening and have a great day, everybody.
WHFR Dearborn.
Yo, guys and dolls, you are at the malt shop with Daddy G here on WHFR.FM. And we're going back to the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the malt shop where the jukebox is playing. The kids are dancing. And here we are, back in the 50s.